When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 745.
I'm going to be in Boise, Idaho this Friday.
Lucky.
For the Fun Comfortable Tour, and then Salt Lake City, and then Los Angeles on October 24th.
Wait, where?
Los Angeles. It's the city you're in.
Oh, it's not right now?
Yeah, you live here.
Not a good town.
You conduct all your
shows.
Business here, and you're not wrong, Kyle. But
that show's real free, right?
Everyone should go to funcomfortabletour.com. Come out. I'm going to do the special in January.
Where in LA are you playing?
The Regency Ballroom.
Oh, awesome.
It's a great room.
Yeah, it's a good room downtown. DTLA.
I can't wait to see you come out on stage and go, let's get fun comfortable in here.
I'm not going to do that.
That's how you open the show.
Well, now I should do that for you.
I've been writing fake reviews for all of your tour days.
Son of a bitch.
Which is just all stuff that you probably don't do on stage.
No, but you know what? I'm going to let it slide.
No.
I'm taping the Fun Comfortable special in San Francisco at the Palace of Fine Arts on January 29th, I think. So the tickets will be on sale for that soon. What do you got on the corkboard, Katie?
Well, I just want to thank people, first of all, who donated or joined the Nerdist Strut Your Butt team.
Because how'd it go?
Nerdist got the top team fundraiser. We were the top
company. And tell
company.
Them about how cool it was.
Yeah, man.
When
we faced all those other fundraisers.
And me and Anthony and Scout went, and we walked
Weird
with all the
other competitive
dogs.
About.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love getting competitive at charity. You should see me at a cancer walk.
Oh, no.
It was so much fun. It was a lot of fun. And
I'm
great.
So
and
glad.
There were so many people there, and Scout ate ice cream, and she had a great time.
God shouldn't do that.
I'm just glad.
No, it was puppy ice cream.
It was made out of puppies.
And that also shouldn't exist.
It was puppy flavored ice cream.
That's a cannibal.
Puppy flavored ice cream would actually be pretty good.
Terrible.
I don't know. Puppy breath is pretty sweet. Right?
What puppies are you hanging out with?
No, yeah. It's like baby breath. It's sweet, right?
Yeah, puppy breath.
Like new things.
You guys are describing puppies and babies, two things that traditionally are stinky creatures.
Have you never smelled a baby?
I'm very familiar with baby smell.
I don't know if you're supposed to go smell a baby. That's
you know the baby, you can smell it.
Are you going up to friends' houses and just huffing baby?
Hey, nice baby. What are you doing? Get your nose out of my baby.
She's just nose deep into its little belly, huffing it like a rag.
What
like
do
she's
you?
Huffing.
What do you have on the cardboard?
We have some listeners from the show who made a horror movie, and since it's October, I figured I'd throw that out there.
Please do.
Called Sad Satan Lost Footage. And it's a cool movie. Right now there's a I think it's a you link on YouTube for maybe the whole movie. Or maybe just a trailer. You guys should check it out. But search Sad Satan Lost Footage. It's about guys who find out about a weird series of games that get deeper and darker and creepier. It sounds pretty cool. Haven't watched it yet because I had to start going to work. And I was like, oh, crap. I have to leave now. But I'm going to watch it after you guys leave the room.
All right, good. Thank you, Kyle. This episode is Brett Gelman, who is promoting season
Gelman.
2. Gelman! Promoting season 2 of Married, Thursdays on FX. Brett Gelman, one of our comedy pals, who's one of the funniest people, who fucking kills it on At Midnight every time he comes on. And I've known Brett for a long time, and he's a solidly good dude. And
one of the best beards in the game.
He's such a good beard.
Solid. Handsome beard.
It's a good, solid beard. It just fills in just the right places.
Just the right things. He gets those cheekbone hairs.
I'm perma scruff. I don't think I'm ever really going to rock a beard.
I think by the another 10 years and you're going to have a distinguished older Beatles look.
You know, I would like to have at some point, if I ever go super gray, I'm going to do like a really pointy beard.
I think you could pull off like a George Harrison light, like two specials from now. You just go like full.
I think
full,
if I did a curly mustache
George.
Now, I'd look like a dickhead. But if I did it when I'm gray, I think it'll look fucking cool.
Then you just look like a wizard full of truth.
All people can get away with that shit.
I will be a truth wizard. Here's Nerdist Podcast number 745 with Mr. Brett Gelman.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
A transaction.
I'm waiting for them to call me.
That sounds expensive.
How much?
It's just $18 million. It's not a big deal. No,
that isn't. That's small.
No. No, they can't just put that through themselves.
Wait, you shouldn't be listening in case they pick up?
Well, no, they haven't called yet. They have to.
I think that would be great for this episode.
To hear me approve transactions.
I'll be witness to your transaction.
Put on speaker so they say the amount out loud.
He approved that transaction really well.
Of course.
I mean, he's yeah, maybe we'll do is we'll just start, and when they call, we can just edit that part out.
Leave it in. Let the kids know the real you.
Shut up, man.
You're getting phone calls.
You know how hard it is to pretend to like all this
what
nerd shit?
Roll, though?
Yes, I do.
What?
What if we're on a roll, though?
The roll
then I'll put
by.
Him on speakerphone and we'll just let the bank person yes and.
Are they calling in a matter of minutes?
It'll be in a matter of minutes, yeah.
Do you want to wait? I mean, I can wait if you'd rather wait.
Well, you know, I just feel like we're here. We might as well start.
All right.
And because I just don't know exactly when it's going to be.
Could be a little later. You don't know.
I don't know.
It could be a half hour.
What if Brett's like, and that's when I really discovered what true love. Excuse me, Brett. I just have to. There's be some really, some really beautiful.
Have to keep it.
Some really beautiful moment.
Yeah.
I absolutely loved the Instagram that you guys did in the bathroom. What was it? What were you guys?
Oh, hot water.
Oh yes, yes.
You know, that's all her. That's always all her. She always is like, she loves Snapchat. And then I'm like, a lot of this stuff you should put on Instagram because it's so fucking funny. But she's like, I'm a serious filmmaker. And I.
She's basically using you to do the comedy stuff. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, this guy's a clown. I can use him.
Yeah, she's always doing like Snapchats of like filming our dog and like how like doing the voice of our dog and how.
Well, I thought you said filming
our dog loves cock.
Okay, I thought you said filming our dong, which left a lot of questions open. Like, so your dog is community property.
My dog is owned by her. The Sam Kennison joke, you know. Yeah, I asked her, but she says the dick stays here.
The dick stays here. I'm sorry, guys. You see me there? Kill me. Fucking kill me.
When you see me working in my lawn, just see me there. Kill me. Kill me.
Yeah. I'll be taking this. You won't need this for a while. I kind of wonder where Sam Kinison would be now. Would he have survived? Like, first of all, would he have died from drugs? And second of all, would he have survived?
He got sober. He was sober.
He was sober at the end?
Yeah.
The guy who hit him was drunk. Mm-hmm. That was the horrible irony of it all.
That I knew. I didn't know that.
He was sober.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear that he was sober. And bummed it.
I think he probably would be in a lot of ways the same what happened with Howard Stern. I think like he had undeniable talent, and the stuff that worked was like so great, and the stuff that didn't work was not because of a lack of talent. It was just homophobic misogynist. But some of the stuff was more just anger,
but also
you know?
kind of a bummer thing to say, but not really odd for the time, especially when you look at the old roasts. They're super racist, super misogynist, super. Oh. So it wasn't like
he wasn't really an anomaly at that time. Like, if he came out now, if someone came out now with that stuff, I think people would be like,
"Well, I mean, Delirious and Raw. I mean, half of Delirious is not half, but Delirious has a lot of homophobia.
Complete
in it,
homophobia.
And Raw is crazy misogynist. That whole thing about women." Like, you being careful to marry women because they'll steal all your money.
Oh, and then getting umfufu from Africa.
Exactly.
And putting, I found your ass on a zebra.
Yeah.
Like, all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then all the stuff from Delirious was, what if the honeymooners were gay? It was a lot of that.
Right.
You know, I'm going to fuck you in the ass, Naughton. Like, all that
stuff.
Right.
Which some of it, I mean, is still
this is exactly what happened. We just got to do a serious
Okay, good, 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 good.
Okay, one sec.
Quick and painless.
Quick and painless.
Easy.
Yeah.
I'm really calling about is how do you start a career in comedy? Just do a podcast, some web videos,
just 30 second version.
Do you have to be? It seems like you don't have to be funny to be a comedian these days. Is that true?
Yes. Yeah, but when you look at all this other stuff, like I know exactly where we were. But all the so the honeymooner stuff. But I think I think Eddie Murphy had since apologized for that, didn't he?
Sure, and he also was like 19 years old.
Right, right.
So something.
Oh, and he had the whole
maybe,
bit about AIDS, too. He had entire AIDS bit.
Right.
Still relevant.
I mean, it's not, it's just, you know, it is, it's offensive.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was of the time, and it was, that certainly doesn't excuse it, but it was rampant, and it was like, it was funny to make fun of homosexuals.
Well, I think it was they didn't really at the time, no one really understood what AIDS was that early on, or certainly the impact or how devastating it would be. So I think to them it was just an STD, like, oh, it's like herpes, but it can kill you. You know what I mean?
Well, I also at that time too, people thought it was a gay disease.
They did not. It was a complete lack of understanding of what was going on. So I think I'm pretty sure he's apologized since then. But I wonder, you know, because Part of the UCB DNA is kind of to, like, shake the cage and, you know, like...
Yeah.
And so where do you think the line is between what's okay to go after and what's not okay to go after?
Well, when I was doing at UCB, I don't think I put too much thought to it. I always thought that you shouldn't say the N-word on that stage usually.
Yeah.
You know, but then I thought, like, it. You know, I saw, like, certain comedians say it occasionally. But now I feel very strongly about that. And precisely just because it's a white male dominated scene. And
right.
I just don't think that it's okay to be getting, even if there is something inherently racist and misogynist and homophobic in that makeup systematically in a lot of ways. So I just don't think that, I think that if you're going to say those things, it's fine as long as you would say it in a room of all of the people that you're making fun of.
Oh, that's a good rule
of thumb. That's why I think, like, Sarah Silverman, I don't think is offensive, because I think that she would say that in a room of those people, you know, whoever she's targeting.
And I also think inherently she... I think the character, Sarah's character, it's clear that she's doing this character that's supposed to satirize a specific kind of person that literally shits on everything and everyone.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a really great point, that if you're willing to do it in front of a room of the type of people that you are using as the punchline, then that's a good way to think about it.
Yeah, I mean, Louis will do jokes with the N-word in it in front of a room of all black people. I know that he would do that, you know. And so it's that, then you're getting into true social commentary and things like that, rather than just getting anger out, which I think is a lot of what is happening at, especially when you're a younger comedian. You don't totally know what you're doing yet. You've not fully come into your voice. And you don't you have no context for what you're saying. It's very random.
I mean, you're just trying to get a reaction, any kind of like almost like a misbehaving kid. You're just trying to get a reaction, and if it's not a laugh, then you're gonna shock the audience and make them go, "Whoa, I can't believe you said that."
Yeah, but it's an all white, mostly male, straight audience.
But it's also empty without any sort of social it's empty without a social commentary or without a point, and then you're just saying it to say it.
Yeah, there's a lot of problems going on, you know, and I've always been aware of that. I, you know, having been in a relationship with a black woman for 6.5 years, who is the most important person to me, I mean, you know, then that only makes me more aware of it.
Of course.
And so she is very much has shown me, oh, wow, this is really, I mean, you know, I mean, that's a big, you know, what a lot of white people are waking up to right now is the effects of systemic racism
right.
in our culture, and really how we are all, in a sense, bred and raised under a racist system, you know, whether we're not looking down upon the marginalized peoples, you know, the people who are oppressed. We're contributing to that in some way,
yeah.
and I think that it's good to admit that, and then move forward and see what we all can do to change and be more aware. And just awareness is an important thing. So, yeah, I think like when you're starting out in comedy, your awareness is about yourself because you're shitting your pants, and you're like, oh my God, should I even be doing this?
Right.
Which is not necessarily a question that ever goes away, but
by the way, I think that's good. I think if you lose that, you lose some of that means that you don't give a shit anymore.
Yeah,
and maybe you're not doing the right thing anymore. I think there should always be a degree of pants shitting.
I think so too.
It just means you care about what you're doing, and it also means you'll try. You'll try harder.
I know. It's. I think it's so important, and then that's what makes you get better, and makes your career not have as much of an expiration date on it either. Because as you start to like take the more things you take on and take in, the more you have to say.
Yeah.
So. So I think that it's good to – I think that our scene too particularly needs to be increasingly aware of this. And I think it will help it grow because, I mean, it's insane what it is now and what it was when you and I, you know, first met.
It's changed so much. Yeah, you and I first met around 2004 or 5, I think, in New York. And you and John Daly were doing Cracked Out, which was fucking amazing. I mean, I still occasionally will think of the song, Ya Bennigans. Like, I still think of the Bennigans song.
Right.
Every once in a while. And when Hard and Firm were, like, we met you guys at UCB in New York, and you, I feel like you were one of the, you were a comedian, because I was fairly newly sober at the time.
Right.
And you were a guy who was like, well, I don't drink, and I survive in the New York comedy scene, and I don't drink, and it was actually very inspiring. Like, oh, okay, it's, a, you know, because
right.
I associate the New York comedy scene, maybe not so much now that I'm older, but at the time it was like, yeah, everyone gets super fucked up, and then they go do shows late at night.
Right.
And you showed me that that's not the
No,
entire...
that's not what I was, no. I wasn't. Yeah. I mean, I drank for a little bit after that, like years after that for a little bit because I was curious. And then I don't think it's for me.
It's at a certain point in your life. I mean, in your 20s, you know, fine. In your 30s, all right. But as you start to get into your 40s, it's like, do you really need to? Is this something you need to be thinking about?
Yeah.
Like, casually, fine. Oh, you have a glass of wine or whatever.
Sure.
But going out and tearing shit up kind of regularly, do you really need to be doing that?
Body can't handle it.
Body cannot handle
Especially
it.
Especially a Jewish body. So, where our inbred paper mache organs.
Just immediately shrivel.
Oh, my God. We all come from four wombs. Just four Eastern European wombs. That's what we're all descended from. So it's like great imaginative genes, but, you know, oh, my God, you got to be careful. of what you put in the body. It's definitely not those, you know, those organs of the hills, you know?
Not like, this old Russian lady lived to 112 and smoked 10 cigarettes a day and drank vodka every meal, and she's 110. You know?
Instead,
it's a people of intolerance to lactose.
Yeah, exactly. How'd they die? Cheese.
Cheese got them.
So alcohol, you can imagine, yeah.
Yeah, but I think, you know, I think one good lesson to younger comics without – because there is sort of that punk movement thing, which I think you see in a lot of different forms of creative expression.
Yeah.
Music and art and painting is just a lot of like, yeah, I'm just going to fucking, you know, just tear shit up and be crazy and just say crazy shit. And because the truth of the matter is developing the skill set to write arcs and to really craft – to nuance bits, it's very hard, and that takes time and craftsmanship and – you know, it's easy when you're young, but, you know, one thing I'd like to tell younger comics is, like, just, you know, just make stuff about yourself, because then you're not – you can't bum anyone out because you're talking about yourself.
Right.
I mean, if you feel like you need to bum someone out and that's part of your creative expression, then at least do that in a creative way. Like, that can be your platform, but don't just – gratuitously say shit to get a rise, or gratuitously, you know, and I talk about filthy things on stage, but I don't feel like I'm gratuitously dirty. They're personal stories.
I mean, I feel like it, my thinking is, if it really is coming from you and you're not, and you're basing it off of something, I mean, I, for those who know my things, I'm very, dirty and definitely, I'm sure, bum some people out. but it doesn't bum me out. Doesn't bum me out. And I think, and it's something that I feel like I feel it's something that I have to say, and that I am making some sort of at least human point, you know, even if it's absurd.
Right.
You know, that's, it's personal to me. I think that that's very much a thing that, I don't think the audience needs to consciously know what the point is. It's the truth of what you're saying. In some way, it's truthful. Even if it is a character you're playing, or you're talking about a subject outside of yourself.
Yeah.
There's some real connection there.
Yeah.
And I think that that is where – that is the difference between good and false.
Yeah, because Louis gets away with a lot of stuff – and sometimes almost doesn't, but still ends up getting away with stuff because there does seem to be a place that's kind of authentic that's come from. Even when he says, oh, yeah, I just made all that up. You know, like I've seen him do that a bunch of times,
sure,
too, where he'll tell this whole story and go, and I made all that up just to, you know.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's getting on stage and being like, this is my life and that's all it is. That's like, you know, even if it is all true.
That's
it,
a one-man show. That's
crafted, and there are things added to it. And, yeah, exactly. But, yeah, it's got to be true in some way. You know, I mean, to me – you know, Mel Brooks's, you know, his films, those were very personal to him in that way. It doesn't necessarily mean from your life.
But right.
It's a personal connection.
Yes. And you know, sometimes one thing that I would hear a lot, I don't hear it as much coastally, but I've heard it, you know, if I've gone home to Tennessee in relation particularly to the N-word, is when you hear a white dude go, oh, it's all right for them to say it, but not us. And it's like, yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. Because
it's not your word. It's not your experience. Like, you can talk about your mom, but if anyone else says anything about your mom, like, what the fuck are you, you know, because that's your experience and that's not their experience. And that's why it's 100% okay.
Yeah. And also, whenever anybody's like, if a person of color comes up to you and is like, oh, that's racist, you can't say it's not. I mean, you can't. Even if that wasn't your intention, I mean, if they're seeing it that way, if one black person or Latino or Asian or Middle Eastern person or Native American person says, that's racist,
yeah,
I can't say, no, it's not.
Right.
Because they're affected by that. And yeah, It's very strange. And it is boiling right now. And I think it is something. It's boiling in the fact that it's always been there and it was ignored. And we all just want that free pass of just being able to say, yeah, no, I think that we're equal.
Right.
Cool, I'm not racist, you know? And then you're like, whoa, look at this whole show. There's not one person of color on here, and you know, and like hired here. And that's like a big thing that I think that we don't even notice, you know?
Right.
Because we're so used to just being segregated.
Right.
We are still very much a segregated society. So.
Yeah. But and it's also – the also tricky thing being that – there are just so many fucking white people. And there's just like, you know, it's like a 10-to-1 ratio of white people to black people in the country. And Latino population's growing. And over the decades, obviously that will just be a
right.
cultural integration because there's just going to be more Latino people, you know, within 50 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, which I think is, you know, I think just like fucking mix everybody up. Just mix everybody up.
I think so too. I mean, that's the, you know, it's that Shonda Rhimes dream, man. No, but I do think that she has, you know, people like her have mastered that.
Yeah.
That like true, integration in our business, which I think is a very segregated business. And I, you know, and you, and it is, hard, the system has been set up, so it's hard to, you know, you'll hear friends be like, you know, I wanna hire people of color, but I just, you know, it's hard. And it's like, yeah, it is hard because this has been set up that white people only have access to white people. So what our job is to go out of our way.
Right. You
know, and make be a little inconvenient because as inconvenient as it might be to hire a person of color, it's not anywhere near as inconvenient as to be a person of color.
So what do you? So what do you do if you're on a show and you have a writing slot open and you have and you've whittled it down and it's between two candidates and with the two candidates that you have, just in this specific situation, it's between a black candidate and a white candidate, and you like the white candidate's packet better, but you don't have any black people on your staff. Which way do you personally go?
I think that, I think unless – it depends. Is the black candidate's packet good?
It's good. Yeah, it's good.
I would hire the black candidate because I would say, like, let's give them a shot. People grow within jobs.
Yep.
You know, I was a worse actor before I did any of the series that I did.
Yeah.
You know, and each of those series and each job that I've done, I've learned more. And so if that, you know, that either candidate is going to get better
yeah.
working for you.
Plus, that's the point of view you want in the room. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. Exactly. Exactly. You want people to be thinking. Yeah. Because, you want people to be thinking in that way.
Yeah.
So it's about having everybody grows then. And then, you know, and that will make your work better too. You know, the white people's work better too because they will have to be they'll be having to rise to an occasion that they don't normally have to rise to.
Right.
In a lot of ways and have a responsibility to their work. And I don't mean like a political response, you know,
of course.
Where we're in a linear way taking on these issues necessarily. I don't think every show should do that. But yeah, an awareness, you know, just opening our awareness more and more, and we'll all be healthier people as a result of that.
Now, in terms of people being the dangerous part with comedy is that, you know, with most comedy is offensive to at least one person in the world.
You know
what I mean? Like, because it's just. Comedy is how we process horrible things. And so in processing horrible things, we're digging up things that people don't normally want to talk about or hear about. But that's sort of the nature of what comedy is.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if one, you know, if you do a joke about something and someone, one person comes up and says, you know, I'm offended by that joke, do you not do the joke anymore? Or do you go, well, I don't know, the lines are so gray. I mean, it seems like there are some things that we obviously shouldn't do, but if you're gonna be respectful to one group, should you be respectful to all groups? Or do you feel like, but then we wouldn't have comedy? Like, where do you think the lines are?
I don't really care. I don't care if white guys, white straight guys are offended.
No, but
by
so,
what
you
I
know,
do.
Example is if, yeah. if you make a joke about like, oh, and then this kid was adopted and blah, and some companies they go, you know, I was adopted and that's really,
yeah, I mean, I
really
think it's
me.
Always a case by case basis. That's the problem with yeah. it, you know, and it's always like the energy to, it's not even just about the material, it's the energy in which it's being done, you know, like to me, you know, what is the difference between Jeff Dunham and Don Rickles? You know what I mean?
Well, puppets. Like,
but what is like poking fun at races? And you, but you're aware that Don Rickles has love for all human beings.
Right.
And I don't know if you're – not that Jeff Dunham doesn't, but I don't know if he does.
But since he doesn't really communicate with people and he communicates with puppets, maybe –
he's bad.
Maybe there's a – you know, it's hard because I think not everyone sees it as nuanced in that way. And I think some people just – they might look at Don Rickles and go, he's 100% – well, what he says is not okay without – I think without really understanding the motivations. And then if you say, well, he's okay because I think he has love, but this is where it gets kind of gray, you know, but
I
agree with what you're saying, but I can understand to people who are not comedy nerds who don't really dissect the, you know, the matrix code behind comedy. Some people just see stuff as, you know, as good or bad without any shades of,
right,
you know.
Yeah. I think that it's always – it's very gray. I think everything is gray. I mean, that's kind of how I decide to – that's my philosophy.
Yeah.
I just think everything exists in a gray area. To think that it doesn't is – you're in denial a bit because you have to judge everything by a case-by-case basis. Otherwise, that's where we get into trouble.
Yeah.
Because if we start setting up black and white parameters, that's when people say, well, that's when very hard-driven rules come up that eventually will be broken anyway and be driven back into a gray area. So,
yeah.
And I just think everybody, there's no one who is universally liked, you know?
Right.
And that you might not offend everyone, but, you know, people will not like you, and that in a way is being offensive,
which by the way is totally reasonable. Like, you know,
yeah.
when people go, what about freedom of speech? Yeah, you have freedom of speech. No one's going to arrest you for what you're saying, but also people have a right to exercise their freedom of speech by not liking what you're doing. Like, it's totally
exactly.
I always love, like, when someone says something really crazy where they're like, well, why can't this person not want to
Chris
do this?
Why do they have that accent?
They're Canadian.
That's offensive to Canadians.
But this is part of my family.
This is part
of my family. Boy, when I went down the family tree and I saw how far back, like, it was just generations of Tennessee rednecks.
Yeah.
Like, my dad's side of the family was just hundreds of years of, like, pig farmers and miners.
Right.
And
it's a noble cause.
It is a noble cause, but it is remarkably – we went right from – British to redneck like that. Like, it was like,
yeah,
you know.
Well, it's not that different.
Blue neck to redneck, we went right away.
I think it's different. I think it's... Well, it depends. I don't. It depends what British person you're talking about.
You know what's that? I mean,
redneck.
The thing that I am constantly really struggle, that I really struggle with is, you know, particularly with the... I mean, I know we're a couple weeks behind it, but the Kim Davis thing of... You know, well, I mean, first of all, the whole flawed logic of like, well, I'm just trying to live like Jesus. Well, no, you're not, because you're just cherry picking the things that you feel like doing.
No, it's very simple, that whole thing. It's like, if she doesn't want, if her religion gets in the way of her performing her job,
she shouldn't have that job.
She should resign.
But also,
from that job, much the same way, like, you don't see Amish cab drivers because it's just not oh, I can't really operate that because I'm Amish, so I won't be a cab driver.
But I just don't understand how anyone would try to express their freedom by discriminating against another person. It's like, you can't go, what about my freedom? Like, yes, you have your freedom, but your freedom can't impede, you can't discriminate against someone else while enjoying
right.
your freedom. Like, that's not how it's supposed
That woman is shackled by ignorance. She's not free. Her mind is twisted and warped,
and
in my opinion.
How do two of the candidates, how was it Huckabee and Cruz who rushed to her defense? And it's like, I don't think you understand how the president's job is supposed to work, because you're not supposed to, because if everyone just made religious-based decisions, then it's fine as long as you agree.
Yeah.
But what do you think would have happened? All these people who rushed to her defense are like, we're just protecting her freedom. What if she was Muslim? What if she was Muslim and she didn't want to perform her elected duty based on her Muslim faith? Oh. How fucking cool do you think they would have been with it then?
Exactly. No, then she's
they would have vilified her and then been like, get that terrorist out of this country. Like, it was
exactly.
So I think that's where I have the biggest problem. It's like, you know, you guys are just being hypocrites, and only because it applies to you.
I mean, if only we could have had like the
to these
foresight to like separate church and state. If only we could have thought of that at some point in our country's history.
Exactly,
if only some guys had thought at some point to write in somewhere.
And she is not as much, because she has the upper hand, but she is a victim of the same, you know,
systemic discrimination.
It all comes back to these rich white dudes
mm-hmm.
who, you know, that 1% that they are ruining everything. They are. I mean, they are in all the world's problems, and all of this ignorance filters through. She is a victim of the conservatives' ass-kissing relationship to the religious right, which they are not doing because they love Jesus. They are doing because of the control
they
that
votes.
They can exert
of
and
course.
Because of the money they can receive.
Of course.
And so it's – she's, you know, and she's been manipulated to think that way by
now,
her parents and then the parents before them. But it's also good old-fashioned – bigotry as well. That's what our country was built on.
Do you feel weird or guilty at all? Because I think we would definitely be in the upper percentage of white earners in this country,
right?
So when you hear people like when you say like rich 1% white dudes or whatever, do you go, well, I mean, not me, even though on paper you are a top earner compared to most people in the country?
I don't think I'm like, you know, I have I don't have like an insane amount of money. I really don't, but I do have more than most people in the
right,
world.
Right.
And so
do you think
you have
more than 99% of people in the world?
I don't think so, but I don't know. But then more than a lot of people. I mean, you know, most of the people in the world are not eating today.
Right.
So no, I do feel guilty about that, and I do, and you know, but right now, at least, the money that I do have is being used to try and set up some sort of future for me and my family. When it goes beyond, when it goes into the nutso zone, which hopefully it will, I'd like to think that I, you know, am philanthropic with that. So, you know.
I mean, performers have an opportunity not only to be financially philanthropic, but also, obviously, awareness philanthropic.
Yeah.
You can use your voice to divert attention to something that maybe people aren't paying attention to, and which, you know, has a tremendous cultural value beyond just money. I mean, money sometimes even just gets in the way because people have to figure out how to deal with it and how
right.
to get filtered out. And I think it doesn't always get used. You know, when you donate to a charity, it's not like, I gave $1,000 to this thing. They're just going to give this kid $1,000 who needs it. That gets filtered through a system, and there's a structure
right.
and a bureaucracy. But,
yeah.
But raising awareness. I want to – my birthday is in November, and I want to do a thing where, you know, hey, if you ever wanted to get me anything for my birthday, I'm just going to set up this charity fund, and you can just give it to this – you know, just donate for my birthday. If you want to give me anything, donate to this.
Right.
I don't need anything. Just donate to this charity,
right?
And you know,
that's great.
And I think that'd be a fun way.
Yeah.
to
I don't do enough charity donations, but I also I do some, but you know, I do want to make that more of a part of life, but I really don't have so much cash flow that, you know, because we don't make the same amount of money that we used to in a lot of ways. But,
yeah.
You know.
And I was doing one when I was, even actually when I wasn't working, there was one that I really liked that was this basically this rescue mission downtown, and you could just set up an automatic, like, you know, even when I was broke, I, you know, like $80 a month. Like, hey, I can afford, yeah, I can afford.
That's
yeah.
Not broke. Huh? That's not broke. 80 a month is, it's a lot. I think you're doing, you're selling yourself short.
At the time,
yeah.
At the time I legitimately had no money.
Oof.
Like, literally, I was literally living paycheck to paycheck and
right.
not
still putting out $80
and
a month
into knowing,
that?
And not knowing where, you know, like where next month.
Right. But
money,
it's something
money,
you felt like you had to do.
Come. But I felt
for
like
charity.
But it felt, you know, but also
I have three Malaysian girls that I every month for children.
Does Dory know about this?
Well, I don't have them.
Oh, okay.
Like,
right.
But I donate every
I think
month.
It's very odd that you would give him shit
every month. I donate.
Proposing that he's lying
yeah.
about that, which is not in any way near as immoral. As, I don't know what's going on with the three Malaysian girls, but...
Well, one of them is...
And why are they
write.
Malaysian, Matt? Why do they have to be
because
Malaysian? Why not
they,
white?
When they came up to me, I said, which country needs it the most? And they had just had the Malaysian... earthquake, and so the girl said Malaysia. I said, "Great, let's
give
go
it
there
give it to Malaysia,
and make sure they're
you
girls."
Just, so you could send them some
yeah.
guitars every month. Send them a guitar. Every
no,
month.
I do. I mean, I do donate to things. But I want to do more of that work. Totally.
I think awareness is
awareness is very key.
Is very key, and you know you have because. The thing about you is that you're funny in everything. Like, no matter, you're one of those guys that whenever you pop up in something, if I'm flipping channels, I'll just stop and watch it because I just like.
Oh, thanks, man.
I just there's just you're. I don't know. There's just you're funny. You're funny in any situation that you are placed in, and it's fun to see how many different things you've popped up in. There's like a, you know, there's a small group of our friends that get, you know, like you and Riggle and dudes who you just see, oh, he's in that too. Oh my God, he's in that too. Like,
yeah.
Are you kind of at a point where you are constantly asked to do stuff and you're kind of picking and choosing or how does it work?
I've started to pick and choose a little more, just cause of time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, in television, I'm, you know, it's movies is not, that started to pick up a little bit, thankfully. Yeah, I feel really lucky about the projects that I've gotten to do. You know, I feel really good about all of them, you know, be it, you know, Married or Another Period or, you know, Blunt Talk.
I saw you in Blunt Talk, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was incredible. You know, that's just... going to play his neighbor, Patrick Stewart's neighbor, and first scene screaming in his face is really intense. And you met, I mean, you know him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's just like a magic person and Mad Men, you know, it's like, it's cool to, I'm starting to pick and choose, but at the same time, it's like, it is one of those things where it's like, I go into one room and I feel like I'm famous, and then I go into the next room and I'm like, yeah, here's my keys.
Yes.
like no, I don't have any money. I'm sorry.
Right. Gelman. It's Gelman. Gelman.
And yeah. And so I'm really hungry now to like have these things that, you know, to have a thing that is like my engine in a lot of ways. Not that I would turn down though any of the things. If I got any of the jobs that I've done this year as offers, I would still do them.
Sure.
Obviously, because they're incredible opportunities. But yeah. So I'm saying no to more things than I ever have, because I feel like I now have the freedom a little bit more, if I don't like something, to say no to it, or if I like it and it's not totally the role that I would want to play in it, that I can say no to it. So, Yeah, it's a little better, but at the same time, you know, we all want to keep it growing.
Well, it's so counterintuitive too. I mean, like, I think being able to say no is probably the best thing you can ever learn how to do, because it's very helpful to say no to things. It puts you in a much better position to be able to say no to things, but it's so counterintuitive to.
Tell me about it.
Because you're so the struggle is so ingrained. Like when you first start out, and you can't. Yeah. No one gives a shit, and you're just, oh, I just anything. I just want a chance to, you know, like that never really goes away.
Yeah, no.
And
no.
So when you do turn stuff down, you're like, fuck. What if I'm not working? And I mean, this is crazy. I don't know if I should be turning this down. You know, it's an opportunity.
I've not met, you know, yeah. I mean, I've not met many people, you know, including big. People like people who you would think are
like Wilford Brimley.
I'm fine, like Wilford Brimley. when I've hung out with him, is he still alive?
He is.
He is. Yeah. God bless.
That's because he gets his diabetes medication shipped directly to his door.
That's great.
I'm gonna go.
You don't kind of feel that awareness of this could be my last job,
right?
Yeah.
Because fame, especially now, I think fame is not necessarily. Protecting you against that.
No. And I think, you know, when you do get a, you know, you fight, yo, I just want to succeed at this. I want to succeed at this. And then you do. And then the fear can set in of like, oh, well, now I don't want this to go away. And then that's when people, I think, start making not great choices because they're, you know, fear-based decisions are rarely, I mean, a fear-based decision like, I should not leap into this tiger's cage is a good decision.
Right.
But
I found out, I heard a rumor that like Christina Hendricks' manager dropped her when she got Mad Men, when she decided to do Mad Men. You know, it's like, why are you doing this 1 hour thing for AMC? You know, it's like, she did not tell me that. I've heard that, and I don't even know that if that's true. But like, it's just. Whenever I've made a decision that I'm like, if I do this, you know, it'll get me this, like right down to like even hanging out with somebody. It's like, it will backfire. It will. And it does seem that, and also it seems like you are a lot of the time rewarded for doing what you want to do in some way. And you look at, and it is a risk. I mean, everything is a fucking risk. If you do what you want to do, it's a risk. If you don't, if you do something you don't want to do, it's a risk.
Yeah.
And sometimes the pros outweigh the cons. I mean, I don't, you know, I definitely have done things for money. I know lots of people have done things for money. I know lots of people have done things for, like, if I don't, you know, if I do this, this amount of people will see it. And that does sometimes work.
Yeah.
You know, in some ways, but yeah.
The truth is you just never know.
I know. It's we all want like a fucking math problem to this business, and it's just chaos. It's just all chaos. It's all job to job.
It's all imaginary numbers.
Mm-hmm. It's so fucked up. It's just like awful. So the business part is awful, but like and that's the thing is like the business part is so awful that you should love the thing that you're doing.
Yeah.
Because that at least gives you some respite from all the fucking bullshit that you got to go through a lot of the time, or at least that I got to go through. I don't know.
I think everyone goes through it at every level.
I think so.
But I think the trick is just to not get so used to the bullshit that you create bullshit because you're used to dealing with bullshit.
Yeah.
Which I think happens sometimes. Like I start to get antsy. I mean, I have no complaints, you know, I have no real complaints.
Yeah.
I love my jobs. I have a amazing fiance. I'm like, things are, and I started to get antsy and kind of like depressed over the weekend. I'm like, why am I have every, and then I realized, oh, because I'm not putting out a fire. And I'm so used to putting out fires that my brain was having difficulty coping with
the
fact.
You need to start a couple, Chris?
Nope.
Okay.
My brain was – it's all I can do to not start them myself. That my brain was basically trying to cope with the fact of like, hey, you can just be okay and that's okay.
Yeah. No, I really relate to you on that. I mean, you know, again, Jew. I mean, that is just – I was brought up to panic and that you needed to always be panicking.
Is that where she gets it from?
Huh?
Oh, you mean? I think Matt's thinking about his wedding.
Yeah. Right. No, I do think. I mean, they do say that there is genetic trauma.
Yeah.
And that you have it built into your DNA. And I definitely think that my people are used to running for their lives and hiding so they're not killed.
Well, you built those pyramids that are so nice.
And, yeah, well, thank you. Us and the aliens. No, but, yeah, and I don't attribute it. I mean, it definitely is something in me that I'm like, I think I do tend to see things as something's wrong.
Right.
And I wake up and something's wrong and I have to go through a process of being like, well, nothing's really that wrong.
Yeah, no. It's,
I mean,
we're here, we're doing a podcast.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to run out and push a rock up a hill to feed your family. Like it's, right. we're good. Like,
even
we're good.
If like we look at people, I mean, especially in our industry, I mean of comedians and actors and writers who, I mean, the majority of them are not working and are having to do other jobs and are watching, truly watching their dreams turn into sand in front of their eyes and blow away, you know, which is our greatest fear, which is what, and.
But even then, those people are still above the national poverty line. You know what I mean?
It's like, exactly.
It's still, you know,
yeah, like, they're not being kicked out of Skid Row
right.
to other parts of Los Angeles because right. a fucking Chipotle is going to go there. Sorry, got to move your tent. We got to serve low-fat burritos here.
They're really good, though, Brett. I mean, have you had
a... They are, you know, it's a good option.
But yeah, but it's so funny, yeah. like, what people, you know, when you hear people throw around stuff like... Oh yeah, you know I don't have any money. Like, well, I mean, you know, even when I said before, like I was broke. I mean, I didn't have. I was able to live paycheck to paycheck. It wasn't like, you know, I mean, there were a couple months where I thought, oh, I don't know where I'm gonna. I'll move back in with my mom.
Yeah.
But in general, like what artists consider to be a poverty line and what you know humanity considers to be a poverty line, there's a little bit of a disparity between those
yeah,
two.
Yeah, exactly.
Those two lines.
Yeah, I mean, and even if you're homeless here, you know, there's still, you know, at least you're not seeing your family get macheted by a warlord.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You know? So it's always, and, you know, and then those people, at least they're not fish.
That's what there's about to take away.
I don't know.
I mean, yeah, my family just got macheted by a warlord, but
no, I don't think it gets worse than that. I don't think it gets worse than that.
But I think
probably.
Being a fish might be amazing because you have no awareness that you don't even like, you know, you're not really aware of it.
But maybe they do have awareness. No, I don't know.
Okay. So to amend this, you're not someone watching your family get macheted by a warlord. But then you're also not a fish with the gift of self-awareness who is also a phobic of the sea. Oh, that'd be the worst.
Yeah.
He just has all these weird sea phobias.
No, it's crazy. It's, yeah.
It's... What do you think people can do to help the systemic discrimination? Like, what do you think? Are there things that people can do just actively or even passively to...
I think people getting involved with other cultures, you know, I think white people working with people of color and with transgendered people and gay people, not that transgendered people and gay people there aren't some of them that are white, but I mean,
but
you
know, just mean
white,
like
white, the your white straight male
cross
white,
like cultural cross pollination.
I definitely think that that's good, and I think going out of your way for hiring practices is a very important thing. I mean, giving and education practices and actually, and really, you know, looking at the news. I mean, really reading and not seeing that as I think that a lot of people see, like, oh, that's like that's their problem.
Right.
Oh, that's so terrible. It's almost like people deal with the police violence almost
sure.
like cancer. You know, oh, what a shame, what a tragedy.
Right.
It's like, well, that's our society. That affects you, whether
right.
you like to admit it or not. That's a poison. That affects all of us. So,
you know, start taking that perspective, integrate yourself. Yeah, it will feel uncomfortable at first. It's not a type of, it's not a group of people that you're used to interacting with. But as you do it more and more, you know, as you work out a muscle, the muscle is sore. You don't know totally know what you're doing. But as you do it, it becomes second nature. And then that is how we cure society.
Welcome to Brett Gelman's workout tips.
You know, and I'm not I'm about to do like another Adult Swim special.
Yeah.
With Jason Wallner.
Fantastic.
And it's on race. And we were like, oh, we gotta like make sure that the crew is not all white, you know, and is not just one black person, you know. It's
right.
It's gotta be a, you know, we can't have me and four black actors and a whole, and everybody else is white when we're dealing with the subject of race,
right?
And then you have the thought, and then I have the thought, and this shows how underdeveloped I am. That I'm like, well, why wasn't I always just thinking that? Why did it take me doing a thing based on race in order to think in this way?
Well, you're always evolving. I mean, like, it's not your fault.
Exactly.
It's not. I mean, the best you can do is to see where you're at and do the best you can moving forward. It's,
yeah. Like, and that's the thing, is like admitting that you need to evolve. That is the first fucking step. Everybody just wants to feel like they're okay. And this is not just in terms of race. It's in terms of everything that is wrong with the world. We all just want to say we're okay. And that is why people get so fucking freaked out. I mean, that is the genesis of All Lives Matter. You're calling me a racist? How dare you?
Right.
It's like, well, you are. I'm sorry. You know? When's the last time you were in a truly integrated setting? I mean, whether you're choosing that or not, you are, because you're only exposed to this one thing.
Right.
So you are, whether you like it or not. I mean, you know, so I think it's admitting that and dealing with the guilt of that, but then moving on and then changing. And that's like a healthy thing. It's like, you know, when you're eating like shit and your body tells you, you got to stop eating like this, you got to admit that the food you're putting in your body is harming your body. And then you start eating better.
So,
and
in other words,
it's a total fucking pain in the ass.
If you don't have a six pack, you have
like
to start blaming the grilled cheeses.
Exactly.
Yeah,
like me.
Yeah. Well, it's just
and
funny.
I don't know.
It's funny. I feel like I constantly see people who complain about something that they're not getting in life, and then you go, but you made these weird choices that, I mean, you're actively making the thing happen that you say you don't want to happen. And I know, you know, obviously there are circumstances that are beyond people's control, but I think it's a safe estimate to say that 30%, if you changed even 5% of the choices that you made in your life would be dramatically different. If you could just change a small percentage of your choices and made better choices actively, and like you said, of course it's harder, but if you want better results, then you have to do it, you know?
Yeah.
It would be shocking, but I was reading an interesting article that was saying that, you know, we used to be an honor culture where if someone said something you didn't like, you would take them outside and usually murder them in the old days. But now we've become a victim culture because we know that the internet will support us no matter what we complain about.
Right.
And so there's, you know, and in some senses, of course, it's good and there's social change. But in other cases, you know, it's people just complaining about their lives. And it's like, well, you're just victimizing it. You're like, you need to make better choices and not just go, oh, how come I don't have what I want?
Yeah, and it's a reactionary culture and a manipulative culture too. Gone are the days of William F. Buckley and Gore Vidal. You know, where like you have these two really opposing forces, and you know, I mean, I'm not a fan of William F. Buckley, or really, I don't know. You know, I mean, people try to come at me on Twitter or something like that, and I'm like, I'm not going to engage in a discussion with you in this way because you don't want to engage in a discussion.
Just want to attack.
Maybe you just want to attack me and prove me wrong. Well, guess what? You can't.
Right.
You know, this is what I think. You can't prove this wrong. These are hard-lined facts. I mean, this is the thing that the right wing needs to wake up to, is like, you're trying to prove like facts wrong. You are fabricating what is factual, you know, and I think that, I mean, and I really do think if you look at the liberal body too, I mean, the most liberals, self-proclaimed liberals, are very conservative because they're not taking on these problems head on. They're not taking on activism head on. They're not speaking out against these things. It is very strange to me that, you know, people go insane about Cecil the Lion and Charlie Hebdo, both of which I think are horrible tragedies that should have been spoke out against, you know, and spoke up about. But then you don't really see a ton of people speaking out against, you know, what, you know, Ferguson or Walter Scott or, you know, Sandra Bland, that this, like, this, it's not just real, it's not, we're not, like, it's not interweaved into the fabric of white culture.
Right.
Which runs everything. And so there is a level of, there just needs to be an awareness. Well, Otherwise, I think it is all our fault.
I think what's happened now, I think one of the sludge part of the byproduct of the internet is that, you know, the internet has basically convinced all of us that everything we think is the most important thing in the world, right? We surround ourselves with everything we like and believe, and we surround ourselves with people who agree with us all the time, and our opinion is right and everyone else is wrong. And
right.
So what that fosters is it completely takes away our ability to have conversations. And now it's just like you said, it's just people shouting at each other. I mean, listen, I think people – there was a thing online the other night where I thought Andy Samberg did a really nice job on the Emmys.
Yeah, I did too.
And someone wrote back at me and, you know, who I believe – was kind of an activist. Like her take was, she was in her life, she was kind of an activist, and you know, she was like, yeah, he just screams of white privilege bullshit. And I was like, okay, well, if you're preaching understanding and activism, you can't take that approach to any side, you know, like you can't.
And did she watch what he did?
Yeah,
I mean, he did a lot of very jokes that were in support of
but she was just sort of making a judgment based on his appearance, which I'm saying that's not okay really for any side. Like, you shouldn't do that for it. Like, get to know, if you listen you don't think he's funny, that's fine, but you can't just look at him and go okay, because that's prejudice. Like, you can't just, you know, and we should be fostering understanding, not this side is wrong and that side's wrong. It's how can we get people talking? I just wish people – and I said, listen, I don't agree with your approach. He's a nice guy and you don't know him. And if you don't like his comedy, that's fine. But I think we should, you know, be more open to have conversations instead of just pointing fingers and go, I don't like that guy's fucking face. And I worry that we are getting into an age where, you know, when my mom was younger, she said, listen, we used to be able to have calm political discussions. I don't agree with you. You don't agree with me, but we're going to talk and try to figure out, you know.
Yeah.
And now those – I don't see that at all. I just see people going like, you dumb fucking piece of shit. I'm going to fucking murder. You should die. You're worse than Hitler.
Right.
That fosters zero understanding whatsoever. So how do we try to create conversations as opposed to just trying to shut each other down all the time?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, right. I think there needs to be an onslaught of that type of thing. I mean, I get what she's saying in a lot of ways. I mean, you know, there should be – I mean, white guys do get everything, you know. And
but that's not Andy's fault.
That's not Andy's fault. Of course it's
not. And I think Andy is on the good side of humanity, you know. And so I would just caution, like
– right.
I would say don't judge anyone – until you really kind of dig in and understand. And because, like you said, well, did she listen? Because he didn't. And it was clear that
I mean, he said, like, Amy Schumer is really funny for a person. I mean, that is, you know, he was making really.
It's a good joke.
You know, and he called out Donald Trump for being a racist. And he, you know, I mean, I thought the joke died in the room, but I thought it was really cool.
It did, to, weirdly.
That whole Jackie Robinson, you know.
The Dodger thing.
Saying
yeah.
that our business has become more diverse is like the manager of the Brooklyn Dodgers
yeah, we
saying
solved
that baseball's
it.
Diverse.
Yeah, like, yeah, we solved it.
Right, I like that he said, like, we haven't solved shit, you know, and I like that he did that. You know, that took balls to do. I mean, especially, like, on Fox and stuff like that. Yeah, I just think, like, hiring practices are a huge thing, socializing is a huge thing, and discussion is a gigantic thing.
Unfortunately, it takes more energy than people are willing to put into to really try to understand an alternate point of view to their own, to our own. So it's easier just to go, I think I get that person. I mean, I do it all the time at midnight. It's like, oh, the Kardashians. I don't know them personally. I've never watched their show.
Yeah.
I make, you know, I put them in a box for comedy's sake. I don't know if I can't say I really understand anything about them or what it's like to
right.
be them. They just seem kind of irritating, but I know that I seem irritating to people too. So
I think it's tough growing up Armenian in Brentwood. You know, I think we should really just focus on
you know, Matt,
the needs
for...
they
I
have.
Mean, I think that she's kind of amazing in a lot of ways.
Which one?
Kim.
Uh-huh. Why?
I just think that she I don't know. I don't think that – I mean, or the industry behind her, whatever that is. I mean, is to build what she's built out of a sex tape, essentially, is pretty crazy. I mean, that doesn't take – that takes – that's not just luck.
No.
That takes a lot of work.
There is some – there is a skill set there.
Yeah.
I do think, you know, the thing that does rub me the wrong way about it is that I think the what it says to kids is that fame at any cost is – you should try to get fame at
yeah.
any cost. And,
yeah,
that,
yeah, yeah.
and it can be empty and it doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is how famous you are, how many Instagram followers you are, how rich you are.
Yeah.
I think that doesn't help the problem. I think that doesn't help the problem in our country because I think it sort of makes – you know, it's just sort of a vapid – you know, the vapiding of America.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm sure in the 20s, it's like, these damn flappers, all they're partying all the time. This is going to be we're going to hell in a handbasket.
I mean, yeah, it's, you know, the show, it's like enough. But, but at the same time, to call her like a moron and a whore, I think is really...
That's
I think that's fucked up.
Right.
And I think that that's false just because if she was just a moron and a whore, then she wouldn't be what she is.
Right.
Just like what the number one Googled person in the world or something like that. I don't know. Then I heard something
if
like
she's
that.
Not, she's up there. I think we can all assume that if she's not, she's way up there.
Yeah. And but what were we talking about right before that?
We were curing the societies.
Oh yeah,
we were talking about.
We've got it all
figured
out.
We were talking about having conversations. We were talking
yeah.
about trying to gain understanding and coming into, you know,
right.
coming to a table with someone and saying, you know, these are the things that I believe. These are the things that I believe. Okay, well, I believe the exact opposite of you, but maybe if I were to dig around a little, I might understand you a little more, or you might understand me a little more, and. Even if we come away and don't agree with each other, we don't have to think the other person should die in a fire. You know,
yeah.
that's not helpful to anyone.
Yeah. Yeah. No, definitely. But then sometimes you need the fire, too. I mean, I thought, you know, those riots, you know, the Baltimore riots, what else could happen?
Right.
What else could happen? You know, what else are you going to do at that point?
Right.
Where you're just like, wow, nobody fucking cares if I live or die. Well, you know what? Now you're going to care.
Right.
You know? And... I get it. You know, what else were you supposed to do at that point?
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, it's definitely a very exciting, it's an exciting time where hopefully we can like really start to change. Cause it is so fucked up that, oh yeah, I was going to talk about, Straight Outta Compton, you know, and I keep hearing these indictments of that film. And like, it's misogynist. And it's like, look, there's no there's no denying the fact that those guys were flawed, you know? But they were also very important to the black community. And they were activists. I mean, they were like creating, like, this is what you made, white America. We are what you made.
Right.
And to denounce it, I think it's very weird that a lot of white people are picking on that film when it's like, well, you want to talk about misogyny in films? Pick any fucking film that came out that year. Why aren't you attacking Paul, you know, Paul Blart Mall Cop, you know? And then, the black film comes out and you got to fucking skewer that. I find very disturbing.
Right.
And that is what I'm talking about, is this like liberal crossover into conservatism where it's like, well, look at yourself. Are you really that liberal, or are you just pro-choice, pro-gay marriage, and that's it, you know? And don't think people should have guns.
Right.
Is that it? Because everything else is kind of in line with the conservatives. You're kind of conservative. And the conservatives are fucking morons, you know, are born-again fucking lunatic morons. So I think that, yeah, we all have to be aware. But I also recognize is that that's not conscious, that there is a subconscious thing going on. And then again, you're seeing the systemic racism in even our liberal people. And we have to take responsibility for the fact the liberals do. Not the conservatives. The liberals, that we have an all-Republican Congress.
I think there are more. I think there are morons on both sides. And I'm friends with, you know, and I know conservatives that I don't think are idiots. But it's not – I think it's – there are – I think the bipartisan system is completely flawed. I think it's completely flawed because it doesn't really allow – it's like, oh, well, if you go to this side, then you support all of this stuff. And if you go to this side, you support all this stuff. And I know it's, like you said earlier, it's grayer than that. It's grayer than that. I know that there are liberals who don't support every liberal thing and conservatives who don't support everything that their party has to. And it's kind of not fair that we're having to be painted into these two boxes. But, you know, not being a political scientist, I don't know what the alternative is, because people – by and large, especially in a country this side, seem to just want simple choices to things and go, yeah, just this or that. You know, it's like,
right.
They just, you know, they just want to supersize it or not. Like, that, they don't really want to have to do all the work to go, what does this person really believe?
Yeah.
How deep does it go? And what are they, you know, what do they really stand for outside of their association to this thing?
And even, like, not what you believe, what are you going to do?
Right.
What are you going to do?
What can you do, though?
In the way
that the government is set up now, like, what can you do? Because the checks and balances and who has control of what, it almost just seems like, how do you make anything happen in a structure that size where, you know?
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, I think, you know, people need to take big risks that could be could endanger their lives, you know? I mean, we think about people like Martin Luther King or Malcolm X or even like JFK or Bobby Kennedy. You know, they made those decisions and they thought, you know, I think they had an awareness that they were in danger, you know? Or you even look at like Julian Assange, or, you know, it's like I think some people might need to put themselves in danger to some degree, I think, in order to change things. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think we fixed
I'm certainly
it,
not willing to.
But someone.
Well, you know, I might lose some fans from this podcast. the conservatives will think I'm a fucking, like, you know, liberal asshole. And the liberals will think that I'm a pretentious prick. So
you're a man without a country.
No, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I don't. I
you
hope
know what, though? Here's the thing that I would say is, like, even if someone doesn't agree with everything that you say, the attacking isn't the way to, you know, it just doesn't solve anything.
Or attack responsibly. Attack and await a response.
Right.
You know, and be able to deal with the response.
Or at least have a willingness to communicate. At least have a willingness to communicate and not, you know, not I mean, you know, like on our show, I really have tried. We've really tried to make sure that we don't just make fun of one side.
Right.
I want. We're on comedy side.
Right.
And I feel like comedy side is it's comedy and everything else. You know? Which was your old podcast. But I think it should, you know, that's the side as comedians I think we can be on.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that anything that's off, including ourselves, should be put out there.
Because comedians are probably the most flawed of all.
Oh my God, we're the worst.
It is a weird thing that we do to have to get up in front of people and validate yourself by getting attention from strangers is a bizarre thing to do.
I don't know one friend who hasn't done or said something super fucked up.
just to get a response or validation or something.
Yeah, or just like fuck somebody over out of like a crazy moment of desperation or like, you know, it's very complicated, very complicated. That's the thing. I think it's admitting how complicated everything really is, and that it's all very difficult, and it's nothing is ever going to be easy.
Yeah.
Why would it be? Yeah. But
so
I'm in another period, and
so party hardy.
Married, still on the air. I think.
No. I believe it is still on the air.
No. Yeah. No, I feel grateful to be working with great people, and like have you know. Be doing good work, you know, in terms, you know, being on shows that I'm proud of.
We love having you on at Midnight.
Oh, I love it.
It's so much fun.
Yeah. I mean, you guys, I mean, you know, it's great. It's great. And that's funny, too, because it's like certain people have been like, man, you're just like fucking around. I like how you do it. You're fucking around. I'm like, I'm not fucking around. I'm just putting in my perspective in there and hoping that it works with the show, you know? So, which it, you know, thankfully does. It's super fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny when like people get competitive on there, like truly competitive, where you're like,
yeah, I've had a couple instances where someone lost, got eliminated, and then I would get a text and be like, hey man, I'm kind of bummed. And I'm like,
what?
You know,
what are you talking
about? And then what I always say to people is like, listen, if you care about it that much, play the game show element. Because in the game show element, if you're faster on the buzzer, you know, that's why sometimes in the very beginning of the show, people don't do it anymore because I think they understand how the show works, but they would accuse me of like, oh, you eliminated that person. You did that. I go, I didn't. You're seeing 21 minutes of a 35-minute show. You don't see everything that happens.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, you know, the people who are faster on the buzzer, like, that's the last run before the end of the show. So if someone's, like, super right on it every time, they're going to get more points. I have no control over that. I have no control over what
and
jokes the audience laughs
Doug
at
Benson
the most.
Doug Benson is the fastest comedian we know.
Isn't it crazy? Because Doug's real competitive. So he's
super.
Like, super on the – he knows how to play the game.
Yeah.
So there is a – I always say to people, like, if it matters to you that much, play it like a game show and you'll probably be okay.
Yeah, no. That whole weed thing does not – you know, slow his ambition.
Not at all.
Yeah.
It might enhance.
I think someday, you know, like when Doug dies and donates his body to science, they're going to realize that something about THC actually accelerates his brain in an opposite way.
That's true of Kevin, too. Kevin Smith is like, that guy is constantly smoking, and I've never seen anyone pump out as much material as that guy. It's insane.
Right.
I need every bit of brain energy I have to get through my life.
Right. I know. But maybe it gets like some sort of anxiety out of the way for them.
It just knocks that out of the way so they can get their own brain out of the way.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I mean, when I'm...
Brett Gelman says, take drugs, kids!
No, I mean, you know, oh, I definitely...
Take drugs, you conservative morons!
Fuck you!
I mean, hey, I got nothing against drugs, but you know, except when people get addicted and get into trouble, that's bad. But recreational use, I think, why not?
Fire in an RV.
But I mean, when I just want to get the jokes, you know, that me and Matt or you know, or me and Blaine have come up with for that day.
Yeah,
it's like this is funny, you know. We wrote it.
When are you coming on again?
I don't know.
Are you on again soon?
Nothing scheduled, but I'm sure I will be.
Let's make sure we get you scheduled on the show.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Soon.
Yeah.
All right.
But,
all right.
Yeah.
I think we did it. We solved everything.
Did we do it? I know.
I think it's all done. Now what are we going to do with all our free time?
Well, guys, I feel better about
society. Well, what else? What else should we talk about?
We're done.
Are we done?
What else is going on now? Have you seen this, guys?
What's going on in the news, then?
I had a very interesting perspective. We're not still recording, are we?
We are, but we can stop.
Okay.
You want us to stop?
Oh, no, I won't say this.
No, yet. I want to hear the story.
No, stop. I can't.
Enjoy a burrito, everybody.
Okay, now Brett's going to tell us a story that you don't get to hear.
Yeah.
So, sorry, kids. Go to bed.
Yeah. Bye, guys.
Enjoy a burrito.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.